If I didn't cut grass, I didn't have spending money for about anything. I had to cut grass if I wanted gas money, if I want to take somebody on a date, anything like that, I had to cut grass. And I remember reading one time in, I think it was Reader's Digest, and there was a story about a man who cut grass. He was an older man, and he never used, this is before riding mowers, by the way, okay? He never used a grass catcher. So what he would do is he'd go out there and he'd rake the yard afterwards, and his son couldn't understand this. You got to remember, I love cutting grass because that's my money, so I'm reading the story real careful. And the son says, well, Dad, you know what? I bought you a present. I bought you a lawnmower with a grass catcher on it. Of course, the father's ecstatic. He doesn't have to rake the lawn anymore. Okay? So the son will come by and say, Dad, I'm coming by on Sunday. And he'll come by on Sunday. His dad's out there cutting the grass with the grass catcher. And he said, son, I love this. This is great. You've got me something great. Well, one day he comes by unannounced. And his dad's out there with the old lawnmower, and he doesn't have the grass catcher on it. Son says, Dad, what are you doing? He said, I got you this nice grass catcher. Well, it turns out that the dad, for whatever reason, he liked to rake the grass. It gave him time to think he didn't want the grass catcher. Okay? So what Scott just said was what I have to do. I'm not smart enough, Calvin, to come up with the zones here. I'm not an engineer. I have to remind myself whether you tighten the screw right or left. And I don't grow cotton myself, but I am a cotton specialist. And like that son who tried to get his dad a new tool, my job here is to make sure that when we're talking about education, come up with something new, it's something that the growers not only can use, not only benefit them, but they know why they should use it and adopt it. And that's what I'll talk to you about today. Okay? We talked a little bit about risk management zones, but I'm the extension specialist. My job is to take a tool that Calvin and the other researchers and engineers are developing and make that appropriate for our growers. And in my definition of a risk management zone, it's my own definition, but it's based upon what I've learned from everybody who knows, is that with the risk management zone, you are simply partitioning a field into areas where, based upon the soil characteristics, the similarities are such that you can expect, based upon the biology, as Scott said, the biology of the system, you can expect the same pressure there. And then with those systems, or with those zones, then you treat them accordingly and appropriately with a nematicide or whatever to make the most money. Okay? Here's the current situation in Georgia. Again, because we've got this new tool, we got the grass catcher, and now how do we get it to our growers? First thing, Scott Brown, what our growers know is they know that nematodes are a tremendous problem. They believe that now. 8 years ago, they may not have believed it in some areas, but they believe it now. They know it's a problem. One of the big things our growers are struggling with now is the second bullet, like where the pointer is. Now we not only have Telone and Temic, but we got Avicta, we got Aris, and now from Bayer Crop Science, we're going to have Votivo out there. And we got other nematicides. We got seed treatments. Growers are struggling with what do we use, where do we use it, how do we use it. Okay? Over the past 4 years in Georgia and prior to that in Louisiana and Clemson and elsewhere, in Mississippi, for instance, we've got a lot of research now that says that we can, in fact, develop risk management zones for growers to treat differently. Okay? And this is exciting because the growers now say one of the biggest discouragements is to think you're going to spend the money to put out a great nematicide, but it costs a lot and you're going to put over all entire field where you may not need it. The next thing we've got is that we've got consultants, and you'll probably hear from some today who are a lot more proficient than I am at using the Veris data, and we'll talk about Veris data, in making maps and using it. So it's not just university now. Private consultants can do this as well. Now, the bottom line is what I do. And so we've got all this research. We've got all this information out there. And Bob, who's the extension specialist, is dragging his feet on how best to present this to the growers. And I'm not saying they always listen to me, but growers will wait with some uncertainty until University of Georgia, University of Arkansas, University of Alabama, whoever jumps in and says we're going to support it. Okay? So the rest of this is, do we have the pieces of the puzzle for Georgia to put this into action? And if we don't have those pieces, what do we need? We know what the symptoms are. Our growers now are very familiar. They know that top left-hand picture where they would have thought nutrient deficiencies in the past. They know that's nematodes probably now. Or nutrients, but could be nematodes. They know what the nematodes are doing. They know what they're doing in the crop. And that's a big advancement. We no longer hear them talk about, well, that's just sorry dirt. It's sorry dirt because we got nematodes in it. But what they really care about is the yield. If you got galls on your roots, but it doesn't steal your yield, who cares? All right? We want the yield. We got a number of products out there that we've talked about. And the important thing is we got a variety of products, but they're not all created equal. They're not all appropriate for the same level in the field. If you look at this chart, this is multiple large on-farm trials where we compare a Victa Complete cotton, a seed treatment, to Telone, a fumigant. That's apples and oranges. The only similarity is they both fight nematodes, but at different proportions and different levels. The yellow is where we had those low fields where the Evicta Complete cotton did as well or better than the Telone. What's it tell you? In those fields, you did not need to use Telone. These larger areas, that's the amount of cotton you made in heavy pressures nematode situations where you needed to use Telone. That's easy looking at this chart. The main thing is how does the grower come up with this? This is what it looks like in the field. This is a field that needed high rates of Temic or side dress with Temic or probably Telone better. And you can see the difference in that field based upon a seed treatment versus the high rates of Temic. It was inappropriate to use seed treatments in that situation. The problem is how do we tell the growers what to do? Okay? Scott talked about thresholds. Thresholds are magic numbers that I really don't have a whole lot of confidence in, but they're a starting point for us. And we say with the southern root knot nematode, the number one nematode in Georgia on cotton, is if we got more than 100 per 100 cc of soil, we need to treat. Okay? But how much more above that do we need to use seed treatments or Temic or Telone? The next thing we know, we've talked about the distribution, or we've talked about the symptoms. We've talked about the nematicides, and Scott alluded to this as well as did Charlie, is that we've got the unequal distribution. And that unequal distribution, as they've talked about, has a lot to do with the cropping history, whether the nematode is built up there or not, and with the soil types as well. But we know that in some areas of a field, we're going to have more nematode damage, and other areas we're going to have less nematode damage. Keith Rucker did this as a county agent at the University of Georgia. The multicolor on the left is where he measured the plant, or the nematode populations. Blue is the heaviest nematode populations, green is the lightest, and he went out and measured the height of the plants. And what do you see? The height of the plants follows very closely the nematode damage. And this was done well before our Verus data. And what this is showing is there are regions in this field where you have more nematode damage, which corresponds to more nematode populations. It's simple. The question for our growers is, how do we determine where we're going to have less nematode damage? Okay? The big factor on this, and when it comes to soil texture and nematodes, is those nematodes live within that's a particle of soil. The nematodes live in that thin film of water surrounding that particle of soil. And for the southern root knot nematode, which is number one for us, they like the space between sand particles. It facilitates their movement and feeding in the soil. That's why you tend to have greater nematode populations there. Okay? 2002, Dow AgroScience sponsored a survey of Georgia for nematodes. And this is the counties we looked at. And I've highlighted in dark blue, medium blue, and light blue counties that we'll talk about later. Jefferson County in east central Georgia, Pierce in southeast, and Mitchell County in west Georgia. This is the distribution of root knot nematodes with our survey and other information we had. Basically, wherever we sampled, we had root knot nematodes. It's widespread across the entire state. When we looked at moderate levels, high levels, the dark brown is nearly every field was infested. The red is most fields were infested. Orange is about 50% of the fields. Yellow is 25% of fields. And green, for whatever reason, we didn't find the nematodes, but we know they're there. But what you'll see is, especially in South Georgia, the sandier areas, we have more nematodes. If you look at the Columbia Lance nematodes, and if you look at the reniform nematodes especially, what's our distribution? Our distribution is along the fall line. Not in the sandier soils, it's along the fall line. So there is a distribution difference. When we look at the percent of fields infested, Pierce County was in southeast Georgia, Jefferson County was southwest Georgia, I mean central east Georgia. Pierce County had predominantly root knot nematodes. When you get into the varied soils, you get more of the other nematodes as well. When you look at the patterns, the soil patterns, and this is from the soil maps that are produced for us, this is Jefferson County, one block of Jefferson County. And what you see is that in this 1,200-acre block, they're not all going to be the same, if I use the mouse, there we go, is that you see in that 1,200 acres, we have 20 different soil types. And what you also see is these are the predominant ones. When you go to Pierce County, we have 7 soil types, and they're all sands, as opposed to the loamy sands and sandy loams in Jefferson County. What's that mean? That shows us, A, that in Jefferson County, there's greater soil differences, maybe more appropriate for use of Varus Rig for erosive zone management. In Pierce County, everything's sand. It may be less appropriate for using risk management zones. We don't know. In Mitchell County, one of our big cotton production areas, all we found, but in 87% of the fields, we found that there were southern root knot nematodes. And when you look at their soil maps from the section I considered, half the different soil types that we had in Jefferson County, and a lot of this is all sandy loams, okay? So what does this mean? We know there's a nematode problem in Georgia. We know that we have, in some areas, we have very different soil types, but in some areas, the soils are pretty much the same. So how do we couple this together for risk management zones? Well, you'll hear in the next presentation how a risk management zone like this was delineated, partitioned. This is in northern Colquitt County, an area not unlike Mitchell County. And it's very easy, once the engineers and once everybody has got the Varus data and run the models, to come up with the different zones, management zone 3, management zone 2, management zone 1. Right? And some growers, one of the things we have to work with is some of our growers would like to think that that's the stopping point. You tell me, Bob, that management zone 3 is a lighter soil, more sand, management zone is a heavier soil, a greater chance of root knot nematodes. I'm going to treat management zone 1 differently than management zone 3 based upon the soil conductivity and the particle size. And what's wrong with that? All this should be is a map to tell us where we need to focus our nematode sampling. And I think that a lot of growers would like to believe that by using risk management zone maps, that eliminates the need to sample for nematodes, because nobody likes to do that. With our risk management zones, once those risk management zones are drawn up, as Scott said, there's a number of ways that can be done. They can do one of three things, in my opinion. The first thing is those risk management zones may accurately reflect soil differences, and they're partitioned along those characteristics, and they may also accurately reflect differences in nematode populations. Heavier soils, less root knot nematode. Lighter soils, more root knot nematodes. It may do that. The second thing it may do is the risk management of those may accurately differentiate the soil differences, but the nematodes were never there in the first place. Or because of great crop rotation, you don't have many nematodes there. So really, from a nematode standpoint, the risk management zones don't mean much. And the last thing they may do is they may accurately reflect differences in soil types in the field. They may make a nice map, but they may have no biological significance. All three of the zones, or all two of the zones, are still sandy enough where the area population of nematodes is not affected. And there's only one way to find out which of those three is true, and that is to take a nematode probe in the field. I'm almost done. All right? This happens to be the nematode populations from what Brenda Ortiz did. And what's outstanding about this is that if you look in the heavier soils, the management zone 1, what you see is the smaller the dot, the lower the population, exactly her nematode populations fit. Here's the moderate zone in 2, the heavier zone in 3, or the lighter sand. And what you can see is in this situation, it worked perfectly, but it doesn't always work that way. Last couple slides. So what is the reality? The challenges are, we got a problem with nematodes. We need to figure out how to use our materials effectively. But what are the challenges? The first one is, I believe that our growers not only would welcome the use of risk management zones, they're ready to use them. All they need is an encouragement from the industry, from extension, from consultants. Okay? I think the treatments like Telone 2, which are very effective, but more difficult to apply and more costly to apply, I think that growers would be more apt to use those if they knew they were only putting them out where they needed them. They weren't wasting money, they were making money. Okay? The Varus data that Calvin's going to talk about in a minute. What I'm really excited about is this is going from being university trials and university research, now we've got private consultants across the Southeast who are anxious to help us to help the growers use this. And I think that many growers will use risk management zones in the future, near future. What are the problems? Okay, things we need to consider. We need to educate the growers that just because you have a picture that differentiates yellow areas and green areas and red areas on a map does not mean anything if you don't use the nematode samples along with it. We need to come up with the biological significance What is the difference between zone 1 and zone 2? We know there's differences, but does it make a difference biologically? And that requires more work from a research standpoint on the biology of the nematodes. And finally, we have what Charlie refers to as non-response, or no, what do you call them? No response or low response zones. You got the nematodes, you've got the sand, you got everything there, and you still make 3-bale cotton. And we need to understand why there are areas that that happens as well. Okay. I would be remiss in not pointing out this is a huge team effort. Biological engineers, ag engineering, plant pathology, the USDARS. We have a huge amount of support from Cotton Incorporated and Bob Nichols, and also from Dow AgroScience, who has a big interest in this as well. We appreciate all of that. A lot of good work has gone into it, and I believe that it will be a future, at least in Georgia, for some of our growers who can adopt it. All right? I'll stop there if there's any questions for me.